This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Coming up, Andy Robbins talks with actor Scott Turner Schofield. He will discuss gender identity on Wednesday at this year's Respecting Differences program in Kalamazoo. But first, a new report finds that 38% of households in Kalamazoo and Calhoun counties are either in poverty or near the poverty line. The United Way released the numbers last week for this region and the state of Michigan. Matt Lynn is Director of Community Impact for the United Way of the Battle Creek and Kalamazoo region. Matt Lynn, thank you very much for being here.
It's great to be here. Good morning to you, Gordon.
So this report includes an acronym called ALICE, A-L-I-C-E. Let's get to the E in a moment, but first of all, talk about those first four letters, asset limited and income constrained. What does that mean for the layperson?
Well, it's a classification of folks that find themselves living above what we consider the traditional poverty line, may find themselves employed, but certainly don't have the financial means as far as income to be able to afford basic necessities, plus have additional revenue to afford possibly creating a savings account, putting money away for their children's college education, being able to even go out, even maybe once a month to a movie with their family. So when we talk about asset limited, it's those that may not own their own home or own their own car. When we talk about income constrained, it's those that have an income, but it just isn't enough to be able to get them to that place where they can afford all the amenities and have that quality of life that they want and may still need some type of assistance in order to be able to make ends meet.
And the E stands for employed. So we're talking about people who are working.
Absolutely. We're talking about people who are working or possibly people that are living on a fixed income as a pension or retirement.
There has been a drop in the unemployment rate and more jobs created both in Michigan and nationwide.
Right.
Has that gone any way toward addressing the problem or closing the gap that we're talking about?
Well, it's always a good thing when your job market is actually growing. That means you have more people that are going to work, which means we have more people ultimately that aren't below the level and in that poverty queue that have moved into that ALICE space, if you want to call it that. But what we know is that out of the all the jobs that have been created since the recession has died down, 62% of those still pay below $20 an hour, and two-thirds of those pay below $15 an hour. So even while more people are entering the job market, they're still entering at a level where they're just maybe above the crest of where they can qualify for public assistance programs that are federally funded. And that's where you have organizations like United Way to support organizations and programs that can meet the needs of those individuals who are working but yet and still need that additional financial resource in order to afford their basic necessities.
How do these numbers track with things like race and ethnicity? Are we more likely to see African Americans living in poverty or close to it than, say, white families?
That's a very good question. And the immediate answer is yes, because we do have within the report, and we do know by other data resources that we have a gender gap and we have a race gap when it comes to wage and earned income. When we talk about the unemployment rates as an example, where we see the overall statistics may lay for the state of Michigan or even for our county, we know that in African-American communities, it's usually about two times greater than the overall rate for unemployment. In our Hispanic and Latino population, it's usually about 1.5 to 2 times greater as well. So that at least indicates that there are some factors that do exist around the race gap when we talk about income earnings over a lifetime. With gender, we see that same thing where women tend to earn less than maybe their male counterparts for doing the same type of work or having the same type of job. Those are some policy issues that certainly we hope that will be addressed. And we see legislation starting to move in that direction where those are focal points. But yet and still, it is a major factor when we talk about the economic viability of households within our region and within our state.
Well, you mentioned gender, and that kind of transitions into something that I wanted to talk about as well, which is age, because women on average are likely to live longer than men.
Right.
So if they are living longer, making less money, are we also seeing that people who are elderly, retired, no longer in the workforce, are part of this group which is struggling?
We do. We actually recognize that we also have more folks who would retire at potentially age 65 working longer because their pension or the Social Security income that they would draw just isn't there necessarily to provide enough income for them to live comfortably in retirement. So as a result, they're working longer. They're having to find different means to supplement what they are receiving from pension in order to be able to live a comfortable life and not slide below all those poverty factors we find within the community.
Does a struggling household mean something for their neighbor who may not be struggling? They may not fall into this Alice category, but if there's a lot of people, 38% in Kalamazoo and Calhoun counties, does that mean something for the people who are living somewhat more comfortably? Does it have effects for them?
Well, hopefully it means that they're recognizing the living conditions for their neighbors and having a better understanding of what are we really talking about when we say that people are financially struggling and who are they? I think we'd like to sometimes believe that people have the ability to pick themselves up by their bootstraps, as you call it. And recently I was reading an article where an author had talked about the fact that the bootstraps mentality is a mystery. It really doesn't exist, that we've all benefited from hands out and hands up to support us getting where we want to go. When we talk about Alice, the interesting thing, Gordon, is that these are folks we see every day in our community. They're the people we encounter. They're the ones that take care of our children. They're the ones that fix our cars. They're the ones that are providing health care for us or for our aging parents in our hospitals, our nurses. So we're around Alice individuals every single day. And we may not know that. When the first report came out in 2014, we spent the last couple of years getting the acronym and the understanding of who Alice is out in the community. And it's taken a foothold. You know, I'm in more meetings where people talk about Alice without United Way prompting it, so they know what that means. Now the next step is, how do we take action around addressing the issues that really affect our Alice households and those in poverty every day? When you use the 38%, we're really talking about combined, those that find themselves below that poverty line, as well as those that are working every day but are financially struggling.
So people who might be just above the poverty line, they're worried about slipping into poverty.
That's correct. That's one of the wonderful things about this report, is it helps to recognize that people are one crisis away. Your car breaks down and all of a sudden the small amount of savings that you've had is gone. And now all of a sudden I'm thrust into making a decision on, do I buy medicine for my child? Do I pay my rent? Do I pay my utility bill? Because now my cash that I had on hand, that was my nest egg, my reserve, is gone. And I don't know what I'm going to do now.
And you mentioned actually in the report preparing for a natural disaster.
Mm-hmm.
That is going to, of course, have broad implications for a lot of people. But if you're someone who is a little better off, you probably have insurance and you probably have the means to, you know, get through a couple weeks before you get a check from the insurance company. Someone struggling probably doesn't, right?
That's correct. You may not have a job that's allowed you to have maybe a 403B or a 401K that you can tap into during that small amount of time when I maybe need to do some repairs around my home, or the insurance, as you mentioned as well. That's also a big factor that we always don't consider, but certainly is a lingering issue and comes to the head during crisis time. So think about the flood that's going on now, you know, and households that are affected by that. If you don't have flood insurance, all of a sudden you find yourself having to pay for damages that, you know, you may not have accounted for in the small amount of income that you have. What do? Where do you turn? How do you find a means to get out of that hole now that you find yourself in it? And it's not your fault.
As you mentioned, you know, you've taken this step of trying to get this as part of the conversation, the idea of Alice and what it means to be in poverty or close to poverty. And now the next step is addressing it. So from strictly the United Way standpoint, what do you do next to try and help people who are either in poverty or maybe thinking that they will be in poverty soon?
That's a great question. A couple of years ago, when we started to evolve our strategic mapping for our organization, an intentional focus was to build our goals, our mission, our vision, to surround Alice and have a better recognition that in all the things that we do as an organization, Alice has to be one of those key platform pieces. So when we look at our targeted goals around education in high school, graduation rates, as well as decreasing some of those disparity rates, it is targeting those youth that are coming from those ALICE households that may not necessarily have the means or the resources from the earliest stages of their educational experience in order to be able to gain advantage and get ahead. So how do we make sure that schools that are connected with ALICE populations have the available resources they need to properly educate our children and move them towards that education and that graduation that leads to a really better job for them?
Of course, that's a longer term solution because there's people now who are looking for jobs or maybe in jobs that, pay something, but you know, as you say, leave them in a situation where they're not very secure financially.
Absolutely. And we have an ambitious goal within our what we call our income area, where we look at housing and we look at workforce supports. And that is to, over the next 10 years, move 8,500 households in our region above that economic line and to move away from being in poverty and now more towards economic stability. That's ambitious. It takes a collective effort, and it takes surrounding now multiple organizations all working together towards that common goal. So when we talk about housing in the immediate, how do we prevent individuals from becoming homeless due to eviction or a foreclosure, and looking at organizations that help support those populations, maybe with the financial resources immediately to eliminate that immediate crisis and then continue to move on with them with coaching, with case management, so they don't get back into that crisis. As individuals are moving into employment, how do we make sure we've got available supports, childcare, transportation, those key things that would otherwise maybe prevent them from staying employed? So it's not just about attainment, it's also the retainment of employment.
So that means working with some other nonprofit groups in the area. Are there also some things that you would like policymakers to look at and perhaps address that they might see in this report?
Absolutely. We certainly hope that our legislators will come to understand really who is ALICE as part of their constituency within the communities that they represent in Lansing and even in Washington, and carrying their voice, carrying their concerns as well, and understanding how policies and processes either are affecting families by keeping them below that line and not allowing them to move up. So when you talk about issues of inequity, as an example, there's certainly policies that may go way back in history that affect individuals to be able to move above that line. And legislators have the tools and they have the resources to be able to adjust some of those policies. So helping them better understand that is important.
Matt Lynn, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much, Gordon. Glad to be here.
Matt Lynn is Director of Community Impact for the United Way of the Battle Creek and Kalamazoo region. Links to the United Way's report on ALICE data and low-income households in Southwest Michigan can be found at wmuk.org.